stupid.
This sucks.
You people are drinking the Kool-Aid.
One of these days, he's going to be in a good mood. This ain't one of them.
Shut up.
Here's Bob McCowan on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Surrounded by buffoons and morons.
Who are you calling a buffoon? Or a moron?
I like Griff. Richard Griffin to my right. How are you, Griff?
Good, good. I was expecting Pinball to be around. But...
No, he's under the table. No. Pinball! What? Oh, he's not there. I thought he might have been.
Later on, I got a great story from Standing. Dunedin to tell you about Pinball.
From where?
From Dunedin, his hometown.
It is his hometown. Dunedin High.
It's a nice little story I got.
Do you? Okay. Well, you're going to wait till he comes?
Yeah.
Apparently, you said he's in the building?
I was told
Brunt's here, apparently.
I don't see the producer. Ryan's not there right now, so I assume he's out trolling for him.
Ryan's just walked into the building.
He doesn't look happy.
He's at reception. Downstairs? Oh, okay.
He just wants to make an entrance.
Send the army down to get him.
Do you know how many people he'll stop and talk to between reception and here?
This place is harder to get in and out of than Guantanamo. Do you know that?
Yeah, it is. It's very safe. I feel very secure when I'm here.
Well, Griff got in, though.
Ryan came down and got me personally.
Did he? All right, so three-quarters of the roundtable's here, so I guess I better leave the announcement until Michael gets here, right?
I guess so.
This announcement.
You have an announcement there?
Are we peeking?
Like, I was just looking over your, trying to read it upside down.
Let me read my announcements here. I'm going to read that later on. Anything new on the Blue Jay front? You've been keeping on top of things? We haven't talked about them for about
who'd they acquire today?
Yeah, they just got a reliever, Carlos Villanueva from the Brewers.
He's Charlie's brother?
Yeah, that's what we're thinking. But
both in Milwaukee?
This guy, this guy's got hair. But this is this year's answer to Merkin Valdez, who they got from the Giants last year, a National League stiff who comes in, fleshes out the spring training roster, and then gets sent down at some point. But it's depth, and that's important for what the Jays are doing right now.
Just a second. 402. What part of 402 do you not understand?
I was actually waiting down there, kind of waiting for something. You usually have somebody come get me. Nobody came and got me. I had to come up on my own.
I think they came down. They just couldn't see you.
Very good. How are you, Bobcat?
Guess what? Pinball's here.
Yes. All right. All right. How you doing?
Good. How are
you? So good to see you.
Nice to see
you. Good. Good. Hey, Mr. Blunt? Brunt?
Oh, Michael. Good to see you, man.
Great to see you, buddy.
Yeah.
Yes.
I saw you in passing at the Grey Cup. I think you were just...
Michael Collins.
Moving by, greeting people or something. I saw you somewhere.
Oh, I was looking for you
because
I knew you were going to be out somewhere. But
they you know the media. We were out in a they isolated us. I know you're probably happy about that. They put us in a place far away.
It's always good to see you when you're not asking me questions.
That's right. See, I got nothing to ask you.
I was looking for you.
There you go.
You were born late, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Yeah,
you were like 2 weeks
fact.
Late.
No, I was 2 weeks early, and I've been trying
you
to make
early?
Up. Yeah, I was. I'm trying to make up for it ever since, you know.
You're doing a good job.
Yes, sir.
Well, it'll be reflected in your compensation.
Yes.
Do you want to do your thing now? Can we drum roll?
Well, we're starting it off here.
Okay.
You know, for the past couple, not even a couple of weeks, not even that long. Well, we've been talking about it for longer, but we actually got in place the Michael Pinball Clemens Foundation, which we here at Primetime and The Fan are helping out.
Yeah.
Our ambition is to build 131 schools around the world in Africa and elsewhere to educate the kids so that they can become eventually self-sufficient. And then, you know, we can end the seemingly never-ending dilemma of feeding and clothing and housing and sending medicine and all those kinds of things. The best way to do it, we think, is through education. If we can educate them, then they can become self-sufficient. And so that's the long-term objective. So Pinball has had an objective of building 131 schools. We want to try and get them closer to that. So we barely just begun. We haven't started yelling and screaming yet, or at least I haven't.
Yes.
I haven't started squeezing people, and I'm prepared to do that, as you well know. But here is the update. So far, we have built 4 schools.
Whoa!
Already. And we've got about $3,000 in donations above and beyond that, so we're well on our way to our 5th school. In addition, as I mentioned earlier, we have a company, Forest Hill Real Estate, who has a plan to use through their agents and their friends and whatever. They have an objective to build a school themselves. So they're going to try and raise the $8,500 within them and pass it on. I said, hurry up.
They're not going to build it in Forest Hill, presumably, though.
No, but real estate agents, you know, maybe they can help in some way. I don't know.
Yes. Well, you know.
So it's a good start.
Good. You know, the one thing I know you're very. You don't like to know about these things. We did at the gala. We did this, you know, big appeal for people to, you know, to step up and to sponsor a school. And I know you don't like these kinds of things, but I do want to brag on you for a minute to say that, you know, the very first person that gave me a check to build a school in this whole process was you. So you're not just talking about this, that you have actually put your money where your mouth is. And you often do that, don't you? I mean, you're worth the price of admission.
Kind of wreck your reputation, Bob. What's going on.
But here. I want to tell because, you know, out in the pub, people ask me about all of you guys, actually, and what you're like. And, you know, because you're these personalities and they say, well, you know, what is this guy like? And they always have this personality of you or this perception of you, and I always tell them that, you know, I won't tell all the secrets. Listen, guys, he is putting his money where his mouth is. I won't go in any further detail than that, but he has got a bigger heart than I think most people know and understand. And I want to thank you so much.
I hate you for saying that.
Yes,
Bob, I
promised you wouldn't.
Bob, I think you found someone to write your new intros at the top of the show.
Yeah. Well,
I didn't promise I wouldn't because I wouldn't have said it. I promise I wouldn't say anything that night.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yes.
Well, all right. So there it is. So all you cheapskates out there, let's go. Well, your family built a school. You stood up and said that you had a family meeting, and you said, okay, here's one of the things. We need a new car. We can buy a new car this year, or we can build a school. And you and the kids voted. You and Diane and the kids voted, and you decided to build a school yourself. So, you're a big suck, too.
Yeah, but people know he's a nice guy. It's like the Grinch, you know, when he grows the heart at the end of the movie.
And it is our foundation, obviously, is something that we have built into, and we really have ascribed to. And we actually did one in each of our kids' name, Rachel, Raven, and Riley.
Didn't know that.
So we're really committed to this project, and we really think it is what makes sense, right? It's the prudent decision. It's not just the feel-good decision. It's actually the pragmatic. It's the wise decision if we're going to actually move forward and actually have a day where people are empowered and we can you know, get to another level of engagement.
Yeah, and I said earlier today, you know, we probably won't live long enough to see the day where we don't have to help. But at least we know that this has a chance to end that seemingly endless cycle.
Yeah, and there's a critical mass at which a country is able to help itself.
Right.
Right? And we might be able to see that day where, you know, the country is strong enough where it's actually building from within rather than having to have people from the outside come in. Yes.
So that's the objective. So if you want to help in whatever way, it couldn't be simpler. Go to fan590.com, click on Pinball's face or any other part of his body, and it'll take you to the foundation website, and there we give you all the information. There's a click-through. You probably have to give a credit card number or something. I don't know what you have to do. There's PayPal or whatever. But it's like you could do it all online. You don't have to write a check. You don't have to put it in an envelope. You don't necessarily have to call anybody. You'll get a tax receipt for it. And now, correct me if I'm wrong. 100% of what is raised
goes directly
to
build the school.
To build the school.
That's right.
There is zero
Zero administration costs.
Zero.
Yes. So Free the Children actually has over 90%. I think their number's 91% go towards. Specifically with this program, I said, we want to do something significant. We want to build 131 schools. In order to make this, then you need to take care of your administration out of the other things that you're doing. They agreed to that. And so 100% is going towards building schools.
And I think that's pretty impressive, too. So that's what you can count on. So we encourage you as individuals, do whatever you can. And no amount is too little. Mm-hmm. It all adds up. And above and beyond that, if you're at work corporately, get everybody at the office together and make something happen. There's a tall guy looking for you out there. Is that Sally out there?
That is.
Sally, want to come in? Do you want to share the mic with John? Look at this.
This could be quite a scene here.
John, Sally.
How you doing, man?
What's up?
Good to see you.
How you doing?
Wonderful.
Man, look
yes,
at you.
Yes, sir.
She got a picture and it shows
your phone. Hey, listen. My hair isn't as fresh as yours up there.
Hey, John, Bob McCown. Nice to see you.
Jump on the mic.
Steve Brunt.
How are you, Steve? John, how you doing, brother?
What's up? Give me a chair.
We'll find one. Go ahead and start talking.
I'm young,
grab a chair. So you guys have to share a mic, but...
I want to see that.
What kind of studio is this? We got to share a mic.
Well, there's only four spots, man. We weren't expecting five and a half. And you're one and a half at least.
And you're giving Michael a little chair too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's okay.
Where are you going to put that mic?
That. That's right, all right. There. Right,
yes,
there's
yes.
Good. Right there's good.
I can pick up.
How you been?
Life is grand. I don't know a lot about sports, so whatever you're going to talk to me about, make it more common life.
What brings you up here?
I'm into prostitution.
Are you? Are you doing it yourself or representing
well,
us?
Only when I was playing, I was the best prostitute I know. But no, I came in. I did this event. An event was Human Race, and for North York Hospital.
Oh, great!
And the people who won, my team came in second. Believe it or not, I thought we won because we had the smartest people. They were the doctors.
Well, this was an intellect thing.
No, it literally was. It wound up being intellect, not elitist, but intellect, because we wound up literally doing a scavenger hunt, but it was a human scavenger hunt. But we were going in these little zip cars, and we go to this place, and you had to shoot guns, and you had to figure out riddles, and you had to go to all these different places.
Well, that's intellect.
It was great. It was great. And I came up, and then Billy Baldwin had a little bit to drink and decided, that's rare, and decided, you know what? Whoever won, you guys are going to get this suite, and John Sally's going to be there with you in the suite. And so I'm talking to a beautiful, first time I ever saw it, white Jamaican girl, but built like a Jamaican girl, besides being white. So I'm having a conversation because I haven't seen this stature on a female of that complexion in a long time. Sent Olivia Newton-John, and I said, oh, my God, yeah, whatever you say. And I just wanted to talk to her. Next thing you know, they were like, John Sally's going to be in the suite with you. And I was like, wow, too bad. I have to come back to Toronto to look at more beautiful women in a beautiful city that has no garbage on the ground.
Now, I thought you said it was no fun here, though. I read that somewhere.
Never said it was no fun. I said it was no fun being a Raptor.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
It wasn't fun on the first team where they, you know, people were still wondering if we had hockey pucks that were going to come out eventually. They had us playing or wood that was on the ice. Pretty soon, I was like, okay. My dressing room was in a bathroom under the stadium, so it wasn't that great being at that point.
But now it's cool.
I think this is the greatest city. I just said it, north of New York. I literally think this is probably one of the best cities in the world. I went to Vancouver, and I couldn't believe how great that was. It was clean. I went riding. I almost got lost. Almost like, what's that park y'all got here? Hope Park?
High Park.
High Park? Yeah, you have to be high to walk through that park. Because it's a big old park, man. And I just liked it. It was clean. Let me tell you, today I did something, and I was at CTV, and it was a Pakistani guy, an Italian girl, a Jewish dude, Irish guy. You don't get that. You don't get that. Me being American, I already have a chip on my shoulder anyway because I'm American black, and you always think that somebody's thinking something other than you. I got it off my shoulder. But in this country, you don't run into that. I like it.
It's one of the unique things about this place, isn't it? It is a true melting pot, and we all just kind of do our own thing, but somehow we manage to get along. There's no mandate to be like everybody else.
Right.
You can be yourself.
And you guys still say sorry for everything. You ever notice that about Canadians?
He went, there's nothing to say.
They're bumping to you. Oh, sorry. Hey, man, I bumped into you. Oh, I'm sorry. Didn't want to offend you.
We do that?
Yeah, you're very offended. Oh, very courteous.
John, I'm sorry. We'll be back on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Toronto Raptors basketball. The Raptors versus the Thunder. Tonight at 7. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590.
It's Primetime on The Fan and Roger Sportsnet in high definition. Leave it to Pinball Clements. You invite him to a party and he brings everybody he knows. Ain't the first time, Sally.
Hey, let me tell you, man. Hey, you got to go do this, man. Pinball's going to be. I was like, okay, we got to walk across. He was over there at that place that used to air Best Damn Sports Show.
Oh, yeah.
I had to walk across. I had to come over here. I had to see my man.
John Sally, Michael Clements, Richard Griffin, Stephen Brunt were all around the table. Since you're here, since you used to play basketball, what do you make of the situation in the NBA today? Is this thing, are they going to lock these guys out?
Yeah, I heard about that. I was part of the first time they were going to lock out the players. I was a player rep. And
99?
No, 99 is when they locked them out.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I was in Miami, it was, we had meetings in 1995. And we were meeting, and David Stern came in, and that was the first time I saw David Stern. He took his jackets off, he rolled the sleeves up, he said a couple of curse words and said, what do you guys want to do now? And I quit right there. I quit being, because I said, we lost. Because we're arguing with somebody that's in charge of the money. And how are you going to argue? And I say it, sometimes people think I say it the wrong way, but the slaves cannot complain to the slave owners about their way they're being. We want some of the money that we. What? This never happened. This is a business. And so when I sat there and they made it very clear, the name on the back is not as important as the name on the front, and we'll prove it. And they took Michael Jordan's name off the back of number 23, and they sold more jerseys around the world. He wound up getting number 45, couldn't sell the jersey to save his life.
That's true.
And so when I realized that it was only about money, it had nothing to do with what fans think it has to do with. All that fanfare stuff that went into Cleveland, that's a bunch of bulk. Forget it. If a general manager would have traded LeBron James and put Bosch on the same team with Dwayne Wade, he would have been considered the greatest guy in the world. He would have been considered Danny Ainge.
Yeah.
He'd be considered Jerry West. But when the so-called employees decide, you know what? Let's make our own Beatles. Let's put this together, and we can share and save $30 million by being in the sun, saving our body for at least 5 years, and we're going to save taxes, and we got a whole new sexy because now LeBron owns that number six. So when you make it a business, they go, we don't want you to be business. We want you just to be the athlete. We want you just to be the gladiator. You know what happens to the athlete when he finishes? He has to beg for a job.
So, John, did you watch that last night?
I work three shows now. I got a new show on the Reels channel. I got a new show I'm doing with the creator of Jim Rome show, the Met Brothers. And so by the time I got to it, LeBron had already had his foot halfway down somebody's sternum. So I was so happy that he went back, and I'm so happy that he signed. Very happy that he put it to him.
Yeah, because he did. He was 38 and three quarters, yeah. Right? He was done after the third quarter, essentially. So you don't. So the a lot of people listen to this are going to say the poor people in Cleveland.
Poor people in Cleveland.
Yeah,
they can't go to the games. The poor people in Cleveland can't go to the games. They watch at the bar.
The poor and the poor. Yeah,
The poor rich people.
Yeah, with that adjective.
Oh, those people
things,
in Cleveland, they're not going to see a championship. When have they seen a championship since Jim Brown? And listen, I tell this now because I know history. Same exact mentality happened when Jim Brown won the championship, went to do a movie, his owner tried to embarrass him. It's that mentality, boy, know your place. That's what the problem was.
And
Jim Brown
said,
came back and said, really? I quit.
Goodbye.
And never came back.
Right? And the guy said the biggest mistake he had was that. So it's not like it's just a way it is. That's the way people or the ownership in Cleveland has been since the 60s. So you see what happened? If LeBron would have chose to go back to Cleveland, the owner would have said nothing. He would have said he was the greatest guy in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If he would have gone to New York, all the New Yorkers would have told the guys in Cleveland, shut up. You know everybody greats leave Cleveland, go to L.A. or New York anyway. But the fact that he went down there where, Jackie Gleason used to hang out just pissed somebody off.
Do you Fountain Blue. Do you do you think it can work in Miami? Those three guys.
Those three guys are going to work in Miami. Are they going to win a championship? Not until two of the guys on the Celtics get hurt. The Celtics are going to win a championship this year.
See, I don't agree with you. I think it's going to implode. I think it'll blow up.
Oh no, it's going to work. It's a rare situation.
What's the matter?
It's a rare situation.
Too loud.
Where you get three superstars and shit. Because I said this. The reason I've won championships because I didn't mind doing the hard work.
That's right. You got to have somebody to do the heavy lifting.
And plus, I'm the one that's going to get all the women anyway because the stars are too busy and all the eyes are on you. I told you, you don't want. Hey, Pinball, see, you was a star. Everybody loose to look at you. You walk in, people. I love that. I love that. Because you get girls say, I think he's an idiot. I go, me too. Oh my God, you know, I only hang out with him because he's paying for the drinks. This is sweet. You know, just say hello to him and wink at him.
John, do they need to put a coach in like Pat Riley who can do it? Or you know, do they need a star as big as
Pat Riley's going to put himself in there pretty soon?
Makes him look better, but I'll say this, and, you know, I've people have disagreed with me, and I've been right most of the time anyway. a coach only wins 6 to 7 games anyway. And if you, we had on my podcast, which is called Spider and the Henchman. I thought I'd drop that. Make sure you check it out on iTunes. I can do it quickly.
Yeah.
And one of the things Lucius Allen, who played way back in with John Wooden, won 2 championships with John Wooden, said, you know, the coach's job is to call timeout and make substitutions when the guy is tired. He's not making the passes or shooting the ball.
But this guy looks like he's got headlights in his eyes.
Yeah, because he thinks that way. And one of the best ways, I would play with Chuck Daly. Chuck Daly was making nowhere close to the money we were making, but we had we respected him because he demanded the respect. He didn't put you in a situation where he wanted to mano a mano. He goes, listen, do your job, and I won't sit you on the bench. Do your job, and I won't recommend you getting traded. You know what I'm saying? Do your job, and I won't have to think about why that young guy right there is playing more minutes than you. And that's how you played it. And back then, guys were playing so the guy behind them wouldn't get minutes. That was a pride thing. Right now, these dudes are sitting around. Man, you know, he disrespected me as a man. Why? Well, he yelled at me. What? So it's just the upbringing.
Is basketball a different sport to coach than, say, football or baseball?
Football is way harder than coaching basketball. You have way too many coaches. You got a lot of coaches, a lot of different guys who are putting their life on the line every time somebody says hut, hut, hut. In basketball, I mean, you ever see a basketball player fight? We wait till the referee gets in front, and then another one, and then you point.
Yeah.
And you point, and then you point, and then you throw a punch. You go, oh, there ain't no fighting. I told this guy, man, I said, $20,000 a punch. You need to fight Pacquiao. $20,000 a punch, man, I might. You punch me all you want. I'm not putting my hands up. It's not going to happen. Much harder.
Well, you mentioned Daly, and we talked about coaches who gain respect of the athletes and what an intangible that is. How do you put your finger on a coach, on which coaches have the respect of their players and which coaches don't? We have a situation in Toronto with the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're bad, and the debate is on, is it the coach's fault? Has he lost the team? Are they listening to him? And the answer is only the players know for sure. But is there a commonality in the guys that you played for, and I want to ask Michael this too, a commonality in the coaches that you played for that you respected?
You go.
Well, I would say, listen, I want to listen to you because, man, you're one of the most engaging guys I've ever heard.
I appreciate it.
I'm going to the
podcast. I just never get engaged again.
I'm going to the podcast as soon as this is over. Say it one more time. What's
the Spider and the Henchman. It's on Adam Carolla Network because he's the number one guy in podcasts, but it's on iTunes too. And literally, I say, you wouldn't believe the emails I get. Plus, we can use words that we don't use on the Fan 590.
Yes.
Because we don't have a vocabulary like yours. And so we have to deal with what we got. But I'm just going to say, when it's not even engaging. Let me just make it about the Maple Leafs. It could be, like the Toronto Raptors, when I was on the team, when we were an expansion team, we had all these different guys. Damian Stoudemire won the Rookie of the Year. We had guys who can play. Alvin Robinson would beat Muhammad Ali's butt. You know, it didn't make a difference. It's just that when guys realize you rebound, you block shots, you're going to shoot the ball, I'm going to set a pick, I'm going to play defense and shut them down, you're going to push your man. When you have that conversation, Your team is great. It is. It's just a great team. It doesn't make a difference what your coach is doing, because your coach shouldn't do anything when guys are realizing it's a commonality. Like you said, let me just say this about LeBron and those guys. LeBron and those guys started their season yesterday. LeBron had to get that off his back.
True.
And to figure out, okay, you see what I did today, fellas? Yeah. I could do that every night, but I'm going to do that less 10 points. And then Dwayne Wade says, well, then every other game you do that, because I got to do it two of the games. And then Bosh is like, well, can I get a game? The problem was they put three guys who attacked the basket the same exact way. And as opposed to the coach saying, hey, every other time we're running a different play, or we're going to run a play three times in a row until they stop it. If they go at you and they stop you, the next time is going to Dwayne and stopping you. Plus, the NBA is in zone, which sucks. And two, you got coaches who grew up watching MTV, watching shaky, 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 go left, dunk. There are no great jump shooters we're looking to come into the game. There's no guys who are coming in and knowing totally how to pass the ball.
Everybody's on once on the ESPN 90-second highlight.
That's the whole mentality. So I just think the coaches, when you get an old coach, first thing they want to say is, well, the game passing by. Look what they're saying to Joe Pa. I mean, that's ridiculous. No one is happy with whatever. And if a coach lost them, get the coach players that want to be there, period. If the guys don't want to be there and you don't want to play, have a conversation. Yeah. Who wants to be here?
Not the other way around.
No, because the coach is making substitutions of great players. So anybody he puts on the floor at any time should work. If they don't, why is it the coach's fault? This makes no sense.
Mm.
Yeah, I certainly agree with a portion of that. Football a little bit different than basketball, though. And in saying that, the coaches who I believe are the best are the ones who didn't have everything in common. The coaches who are the best are the ones who can take different groups of guys, different kinds of groups of guys, and engage them and get them to play on the same page. Now, he said the key thing. The key thing is when the coach is really working, he looks like he's not working, right? And that is when the players actually take ownership. But I do believe that there's a process there. So you want to get it to the point where it's not your team, it's their team, and they take ownership, and you do have a guy who's blocking shots, another guy who's going to rebound, another guy who scores, another guy who's setting picks, and they understand their roles and their responsibility, and it's theirs. They own it. You're not trying to hold it accountable. You're never going to be as successful trying to hold somebody accountable as you will be if they take ownership of it. When they own it, it's theirs, right? And you go. And so the successful coach is actually able to get people to take ownership. And there is some magic in that as a coach. It's not just, you know, a group of players deciding this. The coach has some influence and input in that. And that is not static. It is dynamic, and it moves and adjusts depending on the group of people, how their age, their experience. Yeah. Sometimes you got an old team, but nobody's a leader, right? So sometimes you have to play a stronger leadership role on an old team. Hardly ever happens, but you have to be, you got to be dynamic.
So, Michael, you're like the, as a football coach, you're like the symphony orchestra conductor with the baton. You're front and center. You're not making the music, but you're making sure that all the parts are working together.
Well, you're like the symphony. Sometimes you're there, right? But sometimes you're actually like the programmer for a computer that's behind the scenes and you don't need to be seen. Sometimes you're in front of the symphony orchestra. Other times you're the programmer. The guy who's the best at it knows how to be in front of the orchestra, and he knows how to be the programmer. And sometimes he actually knows how to play.
You know what? Remember back in the day, when you had a coach, the coach lasts forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Tom Landry.
Right. You last forever.
29
years. Because the coach doesn't play. And most of the time, it's what Chuck Daly would say. Sometimes it's when you see a guy becoming a coach, he looks like a head coach. It's just a mentality. I mean, he looks like somebody can get you to pay attention to him. If he looks like he's scattered and doesn't know what's going on, why the hell should you pay attention to him? I tell these guys all the time, man, coach is tripping, man. Coach ain't giving me any minutes. Coach ain't. I said, coach shouldn't be in your vocabulary. When you make a mistake, you're the first guy to look at the sideline to see if the coach is going to be mad or if he's getting subbed. Well, if you never made mistakes,
you're never looking over there.
Right. I mean, everybody makes mistakes. Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Jeter. Well, Jeter don't make mistakes. He didn't get married. I did that for you guys.
You got to get out of here.
Yes. I have to go to the game and watch Durant drop 50. But I wanted to do it in a nice place, and I wanted a beer that had more alcohol than the wine in Northern California. So I wanted to come up to Canada. Thanks for having me.
Great to see you. Thanks for coming in. You're welcome here anytime, man.
Oh, thank you.
Man. Oh, man.
John Sally, we'll come back with the rest of the gang. Primetime will continue on The Fan and Sportsnet.
Crystal Nation, awaken. Andrew Crystal in the morning, Monday, 5:30 to 9. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Coming up 15 minutes before the hour. God, thank God we got that tall drink of water out of here. Sally has left the building.
I'm disappointed. Yes. I listen to you all the time, and well, I'm always entertained, but...
That was pretty special, wasn't
it? He got you today, I think. Yes.
Well, I didn't shut up the whole time. But he wasn't here for long, so...
Okay, I found this Toronto story, but I got to make sure it's, I can read it. So, make sure it's not obscene.
Oh, but he slags Toronto all over the place?
No, he doesn't slag. It was during that time, those early days with the Raptors. So, I got to just check this out. Speak among yourselves for a second.
Well, look, that was a crappy team, wasn't it? I mean, let's be honest. I mean, it was an expansion team. And
for an expansion team, I thought they played pretty fun basketball.
Why wouldn't you? If you have no expectation of winning, you play loose, you play fun. I mean, I have fond memories.
That wasn't the case for the team on the West Coast and many other expansion teams.
Which one? The Clippers? Vancouver.
Yes. But the Raps lucked out because their first draft pick was Damon Stoudemire, and the ball's in his hand all the time.
That's true.
And he was an exciting player brought that energy to the arena.
Who was the Big Country, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say, who was the Steph that they hired out there? It was Big Country.
Yeah, Big Country.
You think that was a small mistake? Well, they just made one mistake after another, though, there. Mm-hmm. I mean, they never had a competitive team. Never. Mm-hmm. Poor people in Vancouver.
Yeah, it was. It wasn't their fault that they didn't bond with basketball.
Right.
Well, no, they were. They never had a. I think they wanted to, and I think they were. If you'd given them half a team, I mean, I would say this: if you had taken the Toronto Raptors record, how many years were they in Vancouver? Six,
Something like that. Yeah.
If you'd taken the Toronto Raptors record over those 6 years, transplanted it onto the Vancouver Grizzlies, they'd probably sell out, or damn close. Now, I can't say that they wouldn't have. The team wouldn't have moved because you had an owner who really didn't move the team because financially he had to. He moved it because he wanted to.
Yes.
Because he wanted it to be close to home and he had a sweetheart deal.
Yeah, no, I think if you'd given them the arc of the good part of the Vince Carter story in Vancouver, I think they would have bought in just the way people here did.
Yeah. But they just kept drafting. Oh, what the heck else did they get?
Maybe it's the area because what happened to the Seattle Supersonics? They had to move too.
Yeah, but they had to move because because like most cities in the United States now, they stopped building stadia for people. They said all of a sudden, hey, you guys can build your own damn stadium. How come you quit coaching, by the way?
Because of truly and honestly, 3 years before I stopped coaching, I told David and Howard that I was going to be stopping after 2007 because my oldest daughter would be starting high school at that point, and she was only going to be home for 4 more years. So she's in grade 11 now, and she's doing extremely well. She's always just been a happy kid, but the 2 years, now a little more than 2 years, I've not been coaching and been at home. It's made a tremendous difference. And she's the football girl, so she loves football, and so she wanted me to keep coaching, right? But it's not her job to know what's best for her. You know, I've often quoted that saying, every successful man is not a successful father, but every successful father is a successful man. So I love to coach. I absolutely loved it, but I absolutely don't miss it because I love my life today and what happens today. And I believe, and it was the right decision to make, right? You know, so you only get so much. I believe parenting is the most noble profession on the face of the earth, and you can only do it once.
So if 2 years from now, she's off to university someplace.
Yes.
And the opportunity presents itself. You might go back?
I might go back, and that's a big might because the other problem I had is I got all of this stuff that I want to do in life, and I've got more hope than I do life left. So I got more different dreams and different things that I want to do than I actually have life left. So
and I don't care about you coaching, but what you clearly should have done is run for mayor. I think a lot of people agree with that now.
Yes, yeah. Well, you know, I guess that the other part of that is it's hard to say I'm going to stop coaching to spend time with my family and then run for mayor. That's
He would have saved some people a lot of grief.
All right. So now part two of that question is the same as part two of the other question. Is that in your future?
I don't know. It's not something I relish. Though, it is one of those no win positions. But I do understand that there is, when the public gives you a trust, that you have a responsibility alongside of that. And, if I did it, I would be gung ho and passionate about it. There's no doubt about it. So it's not like I would have to, I'm saying that it's not something I relish, just because, it is, Well, this is the honest part of it, right?
Okay.
The honest part is the system that we have is difficult because when people get into politics, they have noble, they do really have sincere, authentic concepts, ideas, inspiration that they want to put forth. But the day they get elected, right now, the idea is to be reelected.
So the system effectively strangles the potential.
Yes. And when you combine that, I think the terms part is another thing.
Right.
So my own sort of, you know, belief itself is that when we have a system where people become career politicians, they forget that the private sector drives the public sector. When you don't understand it, when you don't have to answer to a bottom line, things get a little bit out of perspective.
Things get a little out of whack. Yes. We got to take the break. We got another full hour to come. Stick around. The network radio stations will join us, and primetime will continue on The Fan and Rogers Sportsnet. The business report today, Mike Eppel isn't with us, so here are the numbers from today. TSX closed up 15, pretty good week. TSX climbing for the fifth consecutive day. Toronto up 15 to 13,178. Dow gained 19. NASDAQ up 12. Price of gold, a record high, up $26.40 today, now at $1,415. Oil gained $1.40, now $89.40 a barrel. That's a two-year high and reflected at the pumps if you've seen the price of gas today. And the Canadian dollar gained 0.05 to $99.66. Those are the numbers for today and for the week. The Business Report every weekday afternoon at this time on The Fan.